Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. This is the place to come to if you want the latest on health and healing and happiness and living a longer life. Today, we're going to begin with a study from John Hopkins University's Bloomberg School of Public Health. It talks about how high antioxidant fruits top the list of items that can protect your lungs. Now, the European Respiratory Journal, major journal, published the results of a study that found protective effects for tomatoes and other high antioxidant fruits against the decline in lung function that can occur during aging. In the present study, they sought to investigate whether a higher intake of dietary sources of antioxidants in the middle-aged European adults could attenuate aging related lung function decline over a 10-year period. And this was very important. So just think of it this way. If you want to have healthier lungs as you age, and why wouldn't you, then look at the antioxidant-rich foods, what we call the ORAC, O-R-A-C. Now that represents all of the antioxidants in your diet. The more high ORAC, the more antioxidants, the more free radicals that damage our cells, that cause the inflammation, that cause the cells to decline and die, those are trapped. For example, anything with vitamin C and quercetin and vitamin E that goes through your body, it grabs on to these free radicals and neutralizes them. So the more antioxidants, which means more fruits, in your diet, and especially the juices. If you were to make yourself a fresh glass of orange juice, you'd be doing a lot of benefit to stopping the antioxidants which cause the inflammation. So therefore, you can turn off inflammation in your joints, your hips, your back, your knees, your neck, and you would be able to help rejuvenate the body. Watermelon, one of the tops, raspberries, cherries, especially tart Montmorency cherries, turn off inflammation but are rich in antioxidants. And a new study that just came out in the last few months was rather remarkable, because you would think with all the science that we have and all the high technology that can determine the benefits of a particular group of foods or individual food, we missed it. We didn't get it right. And that is that vitamin C is 10 times more powerful than what we had ever imagined or realized. So some people thought, well, I'll take a glass of orange juice, maybe an 8-ounce glass, it'll give me, what, about 100 milligrams of vitamin C? No, it gives you a lot more, as does grapefruit juice too. And so the more of that good quality organic orange juice you put in your body, the more antioxidants you have. Because a lot of people just don't take supplements. And when they do take supplements, they don't take the right supplements or the right amounts or the right combinations. So I say, let's just start with the basics. How about increase your intake of fruits and especially apples? The apple skin is where the nutrients are. So why not just peel 4 apples, take the skins, and put them into a blender or juice extractor? And then put that in your smoothie. You're getting a tremendous amount of quercetin. By the way, I'm here in front of a high-resolution camera. I'm only about 4 feet from the camera itself. And I have several lights on. These are 400-watt lights. So no makeup. Just got out of the shower and took some water and threw it through my hair. And take a careful look at my skin. Why? And my nails. Why? Nails are hard, pink, and shiny. That shows that the nutrition that I'm taking in is manifesting in the quality of the skin. Now, because the amount of vitamin C and quercetin, Q-U-E-R-E-C-T-I-N, onions and apples, two of your best sources, or supplement. And I take the same amount of quercetin I do as vitamin C throughout the day. Because as you're working out, and I'm in training now for races, I just finished a race, and at state championship level. So you know, you're using more vitamin C. And as you use more vitamin C and other nutrients, you have to replace them. And we forget that. Oh, once in the morning is all we need. It's not true. You need nutrients all day. And before I go to bed at night, I take about 2 hours to 3 hours before, I take several nutrients to protect my body and to help it in its catabolic or slowing down, cleansing and detoxifying your skin cells, your intestinal cells, the food going through your intestine, the peristalsis, the wave-like movement of food to get it out of the body, get the nutrients absorbed. And all that is good. But to help it, I take magnesium, coenzyme Q10, L-carnitine for the heart and for the brain. Also vitamin C and quercetin, cayenne pepper at a high heat, a capsule, because it thins the blood and prevents aggregate accumulation of the cells clumping together. That helps prevent a stroke. You'd be amazed at how many strokes occur in the middle of the night. So this is one of the things you can do to protect yourself. If you have trouble sleeping, then take theanine, 200 milligrams, or take you can also take melatonin, 1 to 3 milligrams. These things help us. But nothing replaces the high-quality food. So you can juice the apples. You can puree the apples and make them into a hot cereal. If you want something really tasty, I'll share a recipe with you. And I'm always in the kitchen creating recipes. That's what I do in the... I'll take a break in the afternoon for about an hour. I'll go into the kitchen to make my meal. I eat my dinner early and because I want a long period of time between my dinner and my breakfast, 15 hours. That's the intermittent fasting phenomena, really de-ages you. And so anyhow, let's say we take some steel-cut oatmeal, that's the healthy oatmeal, or millet, or red quinoa, and the millet takes almost no cooking at all. In fact, you can take a bowl of millet and always rinse your grains, put them in a big bowl. I make about a week's worth of time. Then I'll pour some hot water, boiling water on it, not to soak it. Then I stir it around, I put a little towel on it, and an hour later, it's ready to eat. And it's got all the nutrients intact. But then I can take some puree of apple, much like applesauce, but you make it yourself. And I blend it in with some cinnamon and some Manuka honey. Manuka honey is the most medicinal, healing honey. I put it on wounds, scratches. I work on, you know, a farm here. You're always getting some kind of cut or scratch because putting up new fencing and working with animals. So some clean it out, hydrogen peroxide, then colloidal silver, then some manuka honey. But when you have that kind of breakfast, you throw in some bananas. They're really good for you. And then sprinkle a little bit of extra vitamin C in there. That's a phenomenal breakfast. And that has been associated with a reduction in the decline of forced vital capacity, FVC. That's another measure of lung function. And further statistical analysis found significant benefit from tomatoes. The more tomatoes you take in, the more tomato juice, and you use lemon and lime instead of salt, because a lot of these bottles, if you look at 700 milligrams and, you know, one serving, whoa, that'll spike your blood pressure. So if you're a smoker or had been, and then you especially need to be helping with apples, bananas, and tomatoes to reduce your PFC, so that's important as well. So, red fruits are going to slow down the lungs' natural aging process, even if you've never smoked. So, and this all published in the peer-reviewed journal, a long-term study. Now, to continue with our discussion of antioxidants, the Polytech Institute in Lausanne, France, found that antioxidant enzymes protect the telomeres. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cell Reports, and it discovered that by these scientists that antioxidant enzyme that protects the cell's telomerase That's the enzyme sequence of repetitive nucleotides, which in turn cap and protect the chromosomes. So to make it simple, telomeres are especially vulnerable to damage caused by oxygen-free radicals, or what we call oxidative stress. So when I'm running, I'm creating better body, burning fat, laying down new muscle, strength, endurance, stamina, balance. But I'm also creating premature aging because I'm increasing the free radicals in my body, and I'm doing that by oxidative stress. Inhale, exhale. We all have to do it every second, but that exchange between oxygen coming in and carbon dioxide coming out, that's called oxidative stress. Now, you can enhance that, make it worse when you smoke, when you drink alcohol, when you eat fried foods, when you eat sugar, when you're around a toxic environment, when you're stressed. All that creates an increase in oxidative stress. Oxidative stress creates free radicals. The free radicals are the byproduct of normal metabolism. And so we can't get rid of free radicals, but if we have a particular antioxidant enzyme, let me spell it for you, PEROXIREDOXIN1, or just abbreviate PRDX1. Now that antioxidant enzyme, which is completely natural, on telomeres, during the cell cycle in which the cells synthesize new DNA and duplicate its genetic material, as well as during the next phase when the cell grows before dividing, well, all this manifests in what happens with oxidative damage. You want to keep the end caps of your chromosomes protected, because when they begin to unravel, just like a shoestring and the little plastic tip comes off and it starts to unravel, the cell dies. So the longer the telomeres, the longer the cell. And every organ in the body will be impacted differently depending upon what you expose it to. Constructively, like a fresh glass of vegetable juice, really good for you. A glass of beer, alcohol, bad for you. I won't go into the chemistry because it's a little complicated, but I'll put it in very lay language. The more healthy living and raw foods you consume, and juices in particular, the longer the lifespan of those chromosomes. Exercising lengthens the chromosomes, and that halts the growth of the process that damages the nucleotide. So, oxidative stress damages telomeres. Vitamin C traps the antioxidants. Quercetin traps the antioxidants. Vitamin E traps the antioxidants. Zinc traps the antioxidants. So you've got all these antioxidants that can trap the damaging free radicals and therefore protecting your telomeres. Well, you have a good, healthy, plant-based diet with lots of juices, you're protecting your telomeres. Taking supplements intelligently that you need and the amounts the body benefits from super benefits the aging process and super protects the telomeres. And that's why, for example, when you want healthy skin that's tight, simple, there are bands in here, muscles. And when you're taking vitamin C and quercetin, that helps reconnect and tighten the collagen. Now, much like underwear, when it gets to a certain point, the elasticity begins to diminish and it loses its tightness and it falls. Not liking to throw stuff away, I can so use. I used to put a safety pin or a bobby pin in there. I'm probably not the only person who's done that. But in any case, now with all the vitamin C and antioxidants I take, the skin naturally tightens. No Botox. I don't use Botox because Botox is a poison. It actually poisons the cells and the muscles, not the skin. It doesn't decrease wrinkles. It literally paralyzes the muscles that the skin hangs on, and therefore your face is really not moving, so the skin doesn't wrinkle. But you have to keep doing it, and you're destroying your immune system in the process. Because why don't they ever tell you this? Oh, before we put the needles in your forehead and around your eyes, make you look like you're, you know, a plastic doll, you were putting a poison in your body, a toxin, and your body's immune system now is going to have to go there and try to destroy all that Botox pollution. So you're not going to have the same immune response everywhere else in the body because it's taking it from everywhere to get it where it's most impactful. So, understand you're going to be more susceptible to other diseases because of putting Botox in your body. Why not put vitamin C in your body? Because it actually reconnects the collagen. And none of the other stuff they're talking about works. Just saying. And this is a different play on the same study I've been mentioning. This is from Baylor College of Medicine. Dawn to dusk, dry fasting leads to health benefits in the study of immune cells. Now, as researchers at Baylor College of Medicine have found more evidence that dry fasting, meaning fasting without food or liquid intake, from dawn to dusk can play an important role in your health. This was published in Metabolism Open. I challenged them on this, and they're finding that it has an anti-arthritic, anti-inflammation, anti-tumorigenic effect on the proteins in the type of immune cells called peripheral blood mononuclear cells, or PBMC. However, what you're doing is you're eliminating hydration throughout the day with, you know, you're fasting without liquid intake. I consider that dangerous. I would never advocate that. But it's going to be popularized now. And also, your blood sugar fluctuates throughout the day. Let's just say that you're a diabetic. You could go into a very serious blood abnormality stage and blood fasting stage. I would never recommend long fasting for a diabetic like this. And you need energy. Think of the people who have hypoglycemia. Think of people who have very fast metabolism. So this is the kind of research that you better take a careful look at, because always use liquids throughout the day. Your body requires it. And also, when you're not using liquids throughout the day, let's just say that it's you're in California and it's a sunny day and you're out and you're moderately exercising and you go for a walk, but you're on this particular type of protocol. And what's happening to your blood? Your blood is thickening. You need liquids to thin the blood to allow better transport of the blood vessels and oxygen. So I would debate them on this. I just shared this with you to show you that there's a lot going on out there I do not agree with. And I believe that we should have open and honest and civil dialogue and discussions. And one last thing here. This is from the University of Manchester. Tomatoes can combat the damaging effects of radiation. That's correct. A team of researchers have discovered that lycopene, L-Y-C-O-P-E-N-E, the red pigment in tomatoes and watermelon, is extremely successful at guarding against the harmful effects of radiation. A Dr. Ruth Edge from the University of Manchester, together with other professors from Keele University, did this study. And they found that one of the carotenoids, and by the way, there are many carotenoids, plant pigments, that give the plant their color. Lots of fruits and vegetables, and therefore juicing gives you this full spectrum, is effective at protecting against radiation. It's that simple. It's been used to treat a wide range of tumors, and so just a little bit of information. And that's the latest on health and healing. Remember, every Monday at 6 a.m., you can end up getting a free copy of a newsletter of all the information I shared. So let's say you couldn't write everything down. It'll be there for you. All the source material, and all of it comes from peer review publications from respected universities. And I think that that's very important. that you have that. Now, that's free. If you want Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday's newsletter, there's far more information, including I'm doing a commentary, and that will go into there. Investigative reports go in there. Recipes, all kinds of information goes into that. There's a small fee for that. We're going to take a break and come right back. We have a lot to share. So go to GaryNall.com. New articles all the time, film clips, there to help you in your journey. Back in a moment. Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. A whole lot is happening around the world. Governments working together with the World Economic Forum to control as many things within our lives as possible. They're trying to control the currency to make it digital. Not a good idea, because then they'll control all of your purchasing power, what you can and cannot purchase, how much you can spend or not spend. And if they don't like you for whatever reason, then look at Twitter, look at Facebook, look at Google, look at Wikipedia. Then they can demonize you. They can cut off your capacity to have any money. They can throw you immediately into poverty. Would they do it? You bet. Look what they've already done to Dr. Malone and Dr. McCullough, Dr. Cole, Dr. Merrick, and others who told the truth about the problems with the COVID protocols. They destroyed their reputations, took away their livelihoods, and still they're courageous enough to continue the fight to present the truth to us. So these people do not have any good intent for us. As one of their major spokesperson, Professor Harari, said, you're useless and you're worthless. You're just non-productive eaters. So they want to control us by taking away the jobs. And they've already taken away about 15% of people's jobs. And then people are just miserable. They become apathetic because they can't find work where they once had work, or a career that no longer is able to supply them with the standard of living. And they sink into poverty, which most Americans are today. So what's another one of their really bad ideas? To control where you live and how far you can travel. In England, they have a community where Oxford University is, Oxford, England, and they're now dividing up that community into zones. And the idea is that you'll be able to drive within about 15 minutes of where you live for everything you need. And if you have to drive out of that to another zone, and you can't necessarily just go across the street. One zone's here and then the next zone's right next to it. No, they have routes that you have to go out around, and you can only make 100 of these trips per year. But let's say that you live here, but you work in a community somewhere else. Well, then every time you go to work, that's one of those. Well, what if you just have a normal job and work 5 days a week? Then you will be penalized. So just going to work now becomes a penalty, a fine. Yes, I see. So in effect, they want to limit people and say they're doing it all to limit global warming. Yes. Let's take a look at this.
News, and I've come here to Oxford, where the County Council have agreed to trial climate lockdowns in 2024. So have our lockdown-loving politicians gone mad with the idea of indefinite power? Well, I've come here to see what a climate lockdown would look like and how it would affect people's everyday lives. So what does a climate lockdown look like? Well, under Oxfordshire County Council's proposals, residents of Oxford will be split up into six zones or districts. So if you have a car and you want to drive between zones, you can only do that up to 100 times per year. Your car will have to be registered with the council, and if you wish to drive between zones more than 100 times, you'd have to apply for special permission. So if you live in a house where there's more than one car, there's no way to cheat the system. Each house is limited to 100 trips between them. So take a married couple, for example. If they work two separate jobs, that's 50 trips each between the newly proposed districts. I know exactly what you're thinking. Why on earth would anyone want to bring this in? They say it's to ease congestion, lower harmful emissions, and to make Oxford a more sustainable city. Or on the other hand, is it more overreaching government powers being snuck in under the guise of saving the planet? You must be wondering, how on earth could something like this be enforced? Well, Duncan Enright, Oxfordshire County Council's Cabinet Member for Travel and Development Strategy, said in October that roadblocks will divide the city into 6 15-minute neighbourhoods. This cute new phrase, 15-minute neighbourhoods, sounds very catchy and innocent, and is essentially the idea that you'll have everything within 15 minutes of your home. As you can imagine, the outrage in the city and around the entire country has been immense, with both Oxford City and County Council receiving a barrage of abuse online, meaning they've taken to social media to try and firefight the uproar. On the Oxford City Council's Twitter page, they came out with a series of tweets to clear up some of the supposed confusion or misinformation around the climate lockdowns. Firstly, they don't like the term climate lockdown and are preferring to use traffic filtering system, much more palatable and easier to slip by. In a series of tweets, they claimed that the staff had received extreme abuse, but also that misinformation has also resulted in both councils receiving numerous calls and social media messages from worried residents. Addressing the concerns over physical barriers, they wrote, "The traffic filters are not a physical barrier of any kind and will not be physical road closures. They are simply traffic cameras that read number plates. If a vehicle passes through the filter at certain times of the day, the camera will read the number plate, and if you don't have an exemption or residence permit, you'll receive a fine in the post." Thank goodness for that. I bet the people of Oxford are relieved to hear that there won't be any physical barriers. However, the council will fine you into poverty if you try to enjoy freedom of movement. Thankfully, they also neatly wrap up this dystopia with some lovely sustainable keywords. "Our aim is to reduce traffic levels and congestion, make the buses faster and more reliable, and make cycling and walking safer and more pleasant." Definitely nothing to do with the World Economic Forum's Agenda 2030 and severely restricting your freedoms. So will Oxford residents be confined to their local area? According to Oxford Council, no. The 15-minute neighbourhoods proposal aims to ensure that every resident has all the essentials, shops, healthcare, parks, within a 15-minute walk from their home. They aim to support and add services, not restrict them. Thankfully, they're clearing that up. For a second there, people must have thought they were being forced into an intrusive system that they didn't want, where they'd restrict your freedoms, track your movement, and ultimately fine you into poverty. No, you silly goose. This definitely isn't part of digital slavery. Reassuringly, they tell us, under traffic filters, residents will still be able to drive to every part of the city at any time. But in the future, at times when filters are operating, you may need to take a different route if you want to travel by car. So subtly worded, it almost sounds reasonable. Yes, of course you can travel freely, but only when we say. Absolutely, you can travel wherever you want. Only if you take the designated route we allow. Will Oxfordshire residents need permission from the council to travel across the city? No, says Oxford Council. But in the future, Oxford residents will be able to apply for a permit to drive through the filters on up to 100 days per year. So yeah, you'll have to apply to the council for freedom of movement. This next tweet I thought was extremely telling. Have Oxford's councils secretly tried to introduce traffic filters? The proposal for traffic filters was first consulted on in 2019 and then updated in February 2022. Following this update, several months of engagement work was carried out with the stakeholders across the city to inform further updated proposals, which were announced in August 2022. a large number of changes were made to the scheme as a result of the consultation, including the introduction of 100-day passes for each resident and reductions in the hours of operation of some filters. I bet the people of Oxford feel at ease knowing their council is kindly allowing them 100 trips between districts instead of none. They continue explaining how they did some minimal outreach, which was analysed by an independent research company. And this helped the Oxfordshire County Council's cabinet meeting on the 29th of November 2022. Essentially, they did some cursory outreach and then quietly voted to bring in the climate lockdowns under the guise of another name, traffic filtering. They concluded their tweets by saying, "The scheme will be introduced as a trial, during which an additional consultation will be carried out to further refine the scheme. A final decision will then be made on whether or not the filter should be made permanent." A decision will be made. A decision not by the people of Oxford, but by the select few lockdown-loving politicians. So why Oxford? Well, it has to be trialled somewhere, and perhaps Oxford was the best candidate city. It has a ring road that they want to encourage people to use, and that's a perfect excuse. Oxford's councils are also being run by global warming fanatics from the Labour Party, the Liberal Democrats, and the Green Party. These politicians love the lockdown, so having them indefinitely must sound like a pretty good idea to these lockdown lovers, and what a more noble cause than saving the planet from global warming. There is, of course, no denying that what we are seeing now is scarily similar to the Agenda 2030 goals as laid out by the World Economic Forum. The tentacles of the World Economic Forum have reached far and wide in parliaments around the world, but are they now reaching as far as Oxford County Council? Even on the World Economic Forum's website, there is a mention of the 15-minute city, and they conveniently have a map making a restricted existence look appealing. Digitally tracked and surveyed, with your freedoms taken away on the whims of a politician. Doesn't appeal to most. But the question is this the framework for the dystopian world the World Economic Forum is striving for? But an even bigger question is, will you comply?
That's being done there. And look at other countries putting draconian rules into place. And yet, no major protests. What do you think about that? We have a problem in America concerning global warming and other environmental degradation. Right now in California, the entire state is getting inundated, especially the northern part of the state, with flooding water. And this is going to go on for some time. Unfortunately, that's not the water they need. You have Lake Powell and Lake Mead and the Hoover Dam that supply 40 million Americans with their water. When you're in Nevada or you're in Arizona, almost all the water you're getting is coming from Lake Mead and Lake Powell. But this is about to end. Within the next 12 to 24 months, they estimate that the water will not be high enough to go through the feeding tubes that then feed into the turbines that create electricity, hydroelectric power. As a result, it's being monitored, yes, but there's nothing being done about it. In fact, to the contrary, more people are moving into the Nevada area, more people into the Phoenix area, and even to Idaho and Utah, the areas that are really out of water. Colorado, out of water. Kansas, out of water. New Mexico, out of water. Yeah, we have a big problem. And instead of asking people not to move here, but find healthy, sustainable places to move, the politicians are inviting people in. The developers are developing resorts with golf courses that absorb an enormous amount of water. It seems almost insane. But that's what's happening. Let's show it to you.
From this vantage point, you can see just how big the Phoenix area is and how it spreads out from Apache Junction in the eastern side, all the way over to Buckeye and the White Tank Mountains in the west side. This is a real time of change in which the supplies of water that Arizona has depended on and that the whole Southwest has depended on are in question like never before, with this shortage on the Colorado River, with the reservoirs dropping to new lows, and that's going to require changes in how Arizona has managed water as the climate grows hotter and drier. It's just the reality of less water in the Southwest.
It was called the Road to Nowhere for the longest time because it was really championed by the development community.
And the idea was that somehow this would all turn into a city of the future. In fact, the city of Buckeye wants to serve this area. It's all in the city's planning area. They want to plan for 1 million people out here. I don't think there is enough water here for all the growth that is planned. And even if there was, it would be finite groundwater that would run out at some point. Even if it was here for 100 years, what after that? Because that water is not replenished. And so once it's pumped, it's pretty much gone.
It seems like there's a plan to shift to more groundwater pumping in Arizona among the cities, among developers. And of course, those groundwater supplies are finite. And so there's a lot of discussion in Arizona about what sustainability looks like in the long term as the state receives less water from the Colorado River. We're coming up on the Central Arizona Project Canal, which brings the supply of Colorado River water to Phoenix, Tucson, and other cities throughout Central Arizona.
And it's been a really abundant supply until just a few years ago when we started looking at the prospect of cuts. In 2023, Arizona will take a cut of 592,000 acre feet. The total delivery to Central Arizona would be 1,600,000 acre feet of water. So it's a substantial cut. But a lot of that water has been used by farmers in Central Arizona, and cities have, for the most part, they haven't relied on that lower priority water, which was at risk of being cut, for the water supplies that they deliver to people's taps.
That sounds kind of complicated. So to what extent do you think people in this area feel like it's a water crisis?
Business leaders, elected officials, people like that, they are worried. But one of the reasons why it's not as bad as it might be is that we never grew into the Colorado River supply. We never built out urban demand for all of that Colorado River water. So we sort of had a buffer that enables Central Arizona to take substantial cuts without it translating into people's taps. The challenge for growth, to a great degree, will be where will water for replenishment come from? Growth has relied on extra CAP water for replenishment for a long time. How soon we'll get to the point where there isn't sufficient CAP water available for replenishment is the big question. People need to take this situation seriously. We need to work at it. We cannot ignore this issue. But Arizona has a long history of meeting these water challenges, and I think that Arizona will do that again.
We're in the city of Peoria, and we've come to a city office building to talk with Kate Powers, who's in charge of their water department. I wanted to just understand more about the mix of water supplies that you have in the city of Peoria and ask you about the shortage and what it means.
We have access to water from the Colorado River, of course, through the Central Arizona Project Canal. We also have access to Salt River Project water, SRP water, and we also have reclaimed water. the fourth water resource we have access to is groundwater, and we try not to use that. That's something that we want to save for the future. And so if we should see one of those water resources become less available than it has been in the past, we're able to shift and move and wiggle where we get the water from in a manner that allows us to continue to meet the needs of the community. So this isn't a situation where there's an imminent threat to the city losing its water supply. Nobody's taps are going to go dry, right? That's not what's happening. The real danger here, the big picture stuff, is that, you know, this community, this valley returns to where we were back in, say, the 1970s and 1980s. You know, back then we didn't have access to Colorado River water, and the groundwater tables were suffering because of it. And if we don't have Colorado River water and we don't have a source of supply to replace that, you end up right back where you were then.
Part of what drives our industry here is the developers, because you can buy a home here for 40% of what you can buy one in California. It's putting a lot of stress on the industry because there's a finite number of drill rigs with the amount of drilling that has to take place because of the growth of Arizona and the reduction in the Colorado River water.
How busy is it? I mean, how...
Every drill rig that my company has is spoken for until May of June of next year.
As Arizona looks to more heavily use groundwater, that's going to mean possibly over-pumping groundwater in places and having declining water tables.
Now we're drilling down into water that's been there for thousands of years. We're tapping on our bank supply that hopefully will last us throughout the crisis. How long can we last before our aquifers start to show the effect of what we're seeing in Colorado River? So hopefully, if you manage it properly and use the water intelligently, then we should be able to manage the crisis.
Hi, Kathy. Why did you suggest coming here to this area?
Because this is the epitome of irresponsible growth. It is growing on desert lands, raw desert lands, where there's no other water supply except groundwater. We have to look at our water as a whole. And it's really hard to separate one water source from another in terms of sustainability. So if the Colorado River dries up, that's 40% of the water supply of the valley.
Right.
So imagine this duplicated over and over and over again on both sides of that roadway. Feels that way to me, that there are no limits really, that we're just continuing to grow. And the growth is very much looks the same as all the other growth, wall-to-wall houses.
It's unsustainable. It's completely unsustainable. We do not have the water supplies to meet the needs of all this growth for what really needs to happen, which means forever.
And so we've kind of turned a blind eye to the fact that we're not managing our groundwater. Well, it's the same thing that we did on the Colorado River. Either we do something about this now or we pay the consequences later. And we're paying the consequences now with the Colorado River because we didn't recognize and deal with the problem soon enough.
I'd like your thoughts. Why is it that we're moving to the very unsustainable places? And these are not inexpensive places. Frequently $1, $2, $3 million. Well, if you're able to make that kind of money, you're also fully capable of doing research. And then knowing that you're not living in a sustainable area, why would you move there? It's a question. I'd like your response. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you to call in and share your points of view on any of the issues we've discussed today or in any of the previous days. I try to put as much information on a variety of issues up as possible, and then offer you an opportunity to comment. 888-874-4888 is our number. Also, I want to thank the people in the audience who have sent in articles or clips. This one, for example, comes from Steve Brown. And also out there, one of the winners won $1,000 plus a very prestigious award from the International Society of Independent Journalists, Valentina Ferrarsi. She sent us like 100 clips last year, but I haven't seen any this year. So, Valentina, you're one of the best of the best. Send those in. And also Steve Brown, one of the pillars of the defense of the liberal establishment in its original and truest form, is sending articles every single day. And this is the latest one. So thank you, Steve. This is from Rhoda Wilson, and this is called Pandemic of the Vaccinated. Japan's excess deaths are 400% higher after the Pfizer booster shots. Now, there are people in the audience who say, hey, I want my boosters. If they give you 20 boosters, I'm going to take them. And I say, fine, good for you. I've never told someone to or not vaccinate. That's your choice. I believe in the freedom of choice. But what happens if you don't have the freedom of knowledge that could allow you to understand the real risks or the real benefits of any given medical application? And that's where the argument should be. Here is this latest study. I've gone through it. I've looked at statistics, and they are accurate. I'm going to quote this. In 2020, during the pandemic, Japan had fewer all-case deaths than all the previous 9 years. On December 1st, 2021, Japan started administering the third dose or booster shots of Pfizer. At the end of 2022, 83% of Japan's population was fully vaccinated. During 2022, Japan experienced the highest number of excess deaths in 11 years. Excess deaths were approximately 400% the number of those in the years 2017, 18, 19, and 21. Joel Smalley highlighted the seasonal deficit and excess mortality in Japan for the years 2011 through 2022. Quote, logical analysis and Occam's razors indicate that the RNA experiment is associated with significant loss of life, end quote. That means the more vaccines you take, the greater risk of dying. Want to hear from you? Come on and, you know, share your points of view. Jeremiah from Harlem, always an articulate and insightful person. Nice to have you on today, Jeremiah. Share your thoughts, please.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk with you, Gary. There's so many things on my mind. There's so many things I'd like to go over with you. But one thing I'd really like your take on is, and I don't know exactly how to phrase this in the most economical way, but what do you see as the fallout from what we've witnessed with these disasters? And I don't call them vaccines. I call them injections that were falsely marketed as vaccines. So many people have been injured. So many people seem to have immune system problems now, so many heart attacks, so many cases of SADS, sudden adult death syndrome. Basically, you drop dead and we don't know why is what that means. You know, I've heard some people cynically say, oh, well, that's it. The biosecurity state is here. I don't really see people waking up. But I feel like this case is a little bit different because when you lose a loved one or you sustain an injury yourself, you're forced to think about things a little bit differently. Some people have clearly chosen to disregard the fact that they were obviously lied to, but some people are upset about being lied to. So I'm just asking, from your point of view, I mean, it seems to me like there's a necessary fallout here. Will Fauci go to jail? Will some of the other architects of this, some of the people who are the leading misinformation spreaders, you know, will they all be brought to justice? I don't know. I mean, there's not a very good track record of rich people or powerful people being punished for their crimes. But it just seems to me that there's a necessary fallout from this. And obviously all the damage hasn't been done. But what's your take on that, Gary?
Did you ever see any of the outstanding documentaries done about how 50 million Germans called themselves good Germans and we didn't kill anyone? And yet no one took responsibility. Just a handful of people were tried in 1947 in Nuremberg, only a handful, when hundreds of thousands actually participated in the death camps around up of the Jews, the Night of the Broken Glass, the Night of the Long Knives, etc. The day that all professionals who were Jewish or communist or socialist were banned from their practices, banned from hospitals if they were doctors. What you'll learn from that is that the bureaucrats and technocrats actually are the people who facilitate what you mentioned, the rich people going to jail. They facilitate. The orders don't come from below. They always come from above. It's an effort of priority. Whoever is deferred to is the authority, is the one who makes the decision. Then to make sure that they're protected, they then surround themselves with indemnification clauses or immunity from prosecution. Before the vaccines were administered, and by the way, it's not Pfizer that makes the vaccines. Other companies they hire make the vaccines, and their records are deplorable. But what happens is, in this case, every single person associated with the rollout of the vaccines at every level of our government and the manufacturers and subcontractors were all made clean, meaning nothing that happened wrong could they be held accountable for. In fact, Bill Gates went to the World Health Organization, and to paraphrase, he wanted to make himself as powerful as a sovereign nation. He wanted immunity from any prosecution anywhere in the world, as if he were a government diplomat. That's the power when you give that amount of money that he's given. And remember, he is the second largest contributor to the World Health Organization, and Gavi helped found that. So the people who orchestrated this, we cannot say at this moment that they knew what they were doing. We don't have that hard proof yet because there's been no legitimate investigations where people under oath and documents are subpoenaed, they must comply. None of that was allowed to happen because the last Congress, this time it may. But I do not see, based upon history, I didn't see the people who were culpable and critical from Kaiser Wilhelm in World War I and all the people who caused World War I, all the people who caused World War II, only a tiny, tiny fraction were ever held accountable. Weapons of mass destruction, Judith Miller. No one's held accountable. New York Times not held accountable. So if they've never historically been held accountable, why should we assume now, with all the protections that they didn't have in the past, that they would care today? If there is no consequence to a bad action, then a person is less inclined to play it safe and go through the rules, a proper procedure, 7 to 10 years of testing before it's administered to the public. As a result of that, I believe that we are in a very bad situation in that nobody would be held accountable. They will come together and say that, well, lessons learned. Hold on, I heard that with AIDS. Lessons learned. What lessons? You're still giving AZT and DDI and DDC and protease inhibitors and different combinations and different antiviral drugs instead of looking at the real underlying causes and treatments at work. So I don't think that we'll learn anything from this. What I do think will happen is that because of the courageous nature of about 25 of the leading medical doctors, all orthodox, by the way, all pro-vaccine, many getting this vaccine, that when they start using their authority in science and medicine with colleagues and coming together, more and more doctors and scientists will stop believing the establishment and the National Institute of Health, which is a completely criminal organization. And the FDA is just pathetic. It's a medical gulag. And as a result, they will no longer give it the support. And I believe enough of the American public are finally waking up. I've said many times, we will never demonstrate against what we should until we're in enough pain. But unfortunately, we have so many things that anesthetize our pain. We have tranquilizers, and we have marijuana, and we have OxyContin, and we have cocaine, and heroin, and morphine, and opium. We have all these in tranquilizers. We have everything so we don't have to pay attention. And then on the other side, we have distraction, bread and circuses, reality television shows. So if you put a person in a position to feel that they're helpless and can't do anything, they become helpless and don't do anything. And the people who are responsible, the doctors, the pharmacists, the nurses, and the legislators, they've never had the courage to stand up and say, we did wrong. They've never apologized. I've never seen an oncologist who missed, who gave the wrong chemotherapy or the wrong treatment to a cancer patient. The patient dies. I've never seen him give a refund. Have you, in all of medicine, a rheumatologist giving COX-2 inhibitors, which increase their death? And did you see people, you know, giving refunds, say, you know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't be practicing medicine. I should maybe be doing something else that doesn't hurt people. No. And the number one cause of death and injury in the United States is iatrogenesis, medically induced. But do you see anyone wanting to change that? No. Is any doctor held accountable for the prescriptions of Vioxx, which was a COX-2 inhibitor? People took it for pain. And there I am, I'm interviewing a professor of medicine who can no longer teach because he told his students, medical students, to prescribe drugs, including Vioxx. He was taking Vioxx, and now he's permanently injured because he had a stroke, and then he had a heart attack. And he said, I believed. And I said, was a professor of medicine, isn't your responsibility to look at the literature? He said, the literature you can't trust today, no matter where it's written, because it's been so compromised. So no matter what you do, if you go to the New York Times, it's not a reliable source. It's biased. The Washington Post is a joke. If you go to MSNBC, and where these other dancing clowns who have good degrees and are smart backgrounds, I haven't seen one of them, be honest, because at the very beginning, they're all with one mindset, a consensus of opinion that has been dictated by people more powerful than themselves, but they rely upon. And they know you're rewarded for compliance, you're punished for challenging. So everybody's compliant. And the few who are not compliant are punished severely. Doctors losing their medical license, scientists losing their grants, and media commentators like for example, last night I was watching Matt Taibbi talk about, you know, what they're seeing now on Twitter. And, you know, it's a total criminal conspiracy. It's against the law what they did. Not a single comment in any of the major media about it. Nothing. So what they choose not to tell you means that you will never be told the truth. If you can't be told the truth, then how can you have true justice? And without true justice, how can anybody be held accountable? And because nobody will be held accountable, we go to what we've always done historically in Afghanistan. And Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in one of the worst massacres, genocides in American history of innocent people, and that was Gaddafi in Libya, quote, lessons learned. Okay, and who's held accountable for the lessons that weren't learned? No one. So your answer is nothing will happen at all. It can't, because they control the justice system, they control the court system, these judges. These judges are just a little more expensive than the prostitutes at 42nd and 8th Avenue, except they're not out there looking the same. They wear the black robes, but they're no better than the judges in the Inquisition. Thank you very much for calling in. Does that answer your question, Jeremiah? I guess he hung up there. Okay, well, that's our program. I look forward to seeing a lot of you on Sunday at noon. Expect the whole day. And we got a choreograph, so lots of rest, lots of questions answered in between each speaker. We're not just going to speaker to speaker. But the best minds in the world that can help, I believe, save some lives are going to be there. Call this number if you want to join us, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. Have a nice weekend, everyone.